Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the South Fork. I'm Nancy Arnold, interim minister with this congregation, and it's very good to see all of you here this morning. This is a shared ministry. I lead services here two or three times a month, and other services are led by the worship associates or guest speakers. Our services vary from week to week. I don't see anybody new, so this may not be necessary, but anyway, our services vary from week to week, so if you're new here or you know someone who'd like to come, suggest they try at least five or six times. Think of it as a 12-step meeting. You need to find just the right spot for yourself. And if you have a suggestion for a service or an idea that might enhance our worship experience, please speak with me or with one of our worship associates who are here. Would you raise your hands, please, worship assistants? Excellent. Do we have any visitors? I don't think we do. No. Okay, I'd like you all to stay for coffee and conversation anyway, even though you're not new. You are most welcome here. And I call your attention to the announcements listed in the order of service. Do we have any other congregation-related announcements this morning? We extend thanks to Nancy Remkes for sharing her musical gifts with us again this morning. I always love when I get to work with her. And to Bev Krause for being our worship associate this morning. As we prepare our hearts and minds for worship, please silence all electronic devices until the service has ended.
Thank you.
We have come into this room of hope, where our hearts and minds are open to the future. We have come into this room of justice, where we set aside our fear to freely name every oppression. We have come into this room of love, where we know that no lives are insignificant. We have come into this room of song, where we unite our voices in the melodies of life. We have come into this room as individual beings. We are here to be together. Let us worship. Bev, would you help with the chalice? Our many different paths come together in this sacred place, graced by the history of our free church heritage. Here we enter the circle of this faith community, gathered around the chalice of Unitarian Universalism. Please join me in reading as Bev lights the chalice. May the flame we now kindle be for us a symbol of the holiness we seek. May its radiance guide us as we walk together in the light of truth, with the fire of commitment, and in the warmth of this community. Our first hymn is Around, and Kent and Nancy are going to help lead it. It's familiar to you, I think. Number 389, gathered here. Tradition we share, the wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. And as you can see up here, we have our own version of an affirmation. May the wisdom of all religions inspire our ethics, spirits, and actions. People may hold different beliefs, they learn from different faith traditions, and look to different sources for truth, and still remain in the same Unitarian Universalist congregation. Because in our religion, we do share different beliefs. We all believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and that everyone is free to search for truth and meaning in a responsible way. And we believe in following our own conscience to make our faith choices. We believe that members' different faith paths enrich the faith of the whole congregation. So what I would like to do today is to create a faith family tree to show you the diversity of faith traditions here. This is a tree. There are some symbols up here from the world's religions. Baha'i, Taoism, Islam, Christianity, Native American, Judaism, Hinduism, Wiccan, Jainism, Shinto, Sikhism, Zoroastrianism, Buddhism, humanist, atheist, and a number of different images of our own UU flaming chalice, which you may see that I actually embedded it in the tree. okay if we put humanist symbol up as well? Because I'm not sure I have an atheist symbol.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
I mean, I'm both.
How many consider yourselves human? So don't go far. Bev, don't go far. Okay. We may use different words and symbols to describe what we believe, but we are all part of the same family tree. And it's our desire for connection that to someone or to something that binds us together here. We're not designed to be in this life alone. We need one another, and we need to be known to one another. That's part of the point of this. We need to know who we are. So when we share our concerns and our joys and our hopes from the heart, our burdens can become lighter and our joys can be a shared blessing with everyone. So let's bring into this circle those who are unable to be here today, those from whom we are separated, and those who might need a helping hand or a caring heart. If you have a personal joy or a sorrow to share, raise your hand. I'll bring you a microphone while Bev lights a candle representing the care and concern of this congregation. You're also invited to light a candle in silence during the offertory music. Thank you, Beth. I think they'll be okay. It'll keep us warm. Let us hold in the heart of this community those whose candles speak for them, those who are ill or grieving, those whose pain is too great to name, and those in the larger world community who continue to struggle for the freedoms that we often take for granted. In the stillness of a shared silence, let us hold them and each other gently in the strength and comfort of this religious community. Spirit of community, help us to remember that our lives are made up of small moments, giving help to one another, listening to someone, talking with another about something that makes us sad, sharing an embrace, a smile, or a touch, offering a thought that might help just a little to make more sense of it all. Our gathering here is just such a small moment. It's a small thing that we do in gathering, and yet it is significant. Spirit of life, help us to affirm and celebrate the moments that we share here today. Guide us in the ways of love and compassion so that this community of faith becomes a blessing for all who enter its embrace. Amen. Our shared ministry expands to where it is needed because of your generosity. We have two collections here. The basket that is passed will hold your gifts for the work that sustains this congregation and the meeting house. And the bowl on the back table supports the Helping Hand Fund, which supports congregations' work beyond these walls, and the minister's discretionary fund, which allows me to assist people confidentially when they need it. The more generous we are, the more other people feel the warmth of this community. Thank you for all your gifts of time, energy, and money, and your generosity of spirit. The morning offering will now be gratefully received.
Once before, and everything to come will.
I invite you to read responsively with me, reading number 654, Impassioned Clay. Deep in ourselves resides the religious impulse. We have religion when we stop deluding ourselves that we are self-sufficient, self-sustaining, or self-derived. We have religion when our hearts are capable of leaping up at beauty, when our nerves are edged by some dream in the heart. We have religion when we look upon people with all their failings and still find in them good. When we look beyond people to the grandeur in nature and to the purpose in our own heart.
We have.
For many of us, the life that is larger than ourselves is this congregation. I invite you now to sing Spirit of Life as we enter into a time of meditation and silence. Different words to describe what is deep within us that provides meaning for our lives, but together we still seek to create the beloved community. Some words bring about a greater response than others, like the word God, which is why someone like Eckhart Tolle prefers the word being instead of using the word God to describe that which is not only beyond but deep within us. His idea is that it's not something we can really grasp only with our minds because we may not be able to make sense of it, but we can begin to know it when the mind is still, when our attention is fully and intensely in the present. We're present to our deepest sense of being. Whether or not you agree with this, I invite you to pause now and quiet your minds. And in the stillness of a shared silence, may the experience of being emerge for you. There is nowhere to rest your eye that does not behold the face of the beloved. Nothing is excluded from the sacred ground of being. What would happen if we could remember this? What person would not be another self, a shining and holy face of the sacred mystery? Open your eyes. See, there is nothing here but you and the beloved.
Thank you.
Following the terrorist attacks on September 11th, people sought out religious communities in which to find solace from the shock and horror they were experiencing. Many of these folks wanted an explanation for what had happened. In their time of need, they turned to religion and to other people for signs of hope in the midst of devastation. Within 6 months, most of these folks resumed their normal activities, and the need for religious community receded into the background. It's ironic that an event that was motivated by extreme religious zeal would ignite the religious impulse in Americans. Terrorists acted on their religious beliefs to slay the perceived enemy of their faith. Seeking hope and perhaps redress, the American people entered houses of worship, many for the first time. If this was to be a religious war, they needed more than lethal weapons to see them through. But the religious call didn't offer the kind of staying power that many Americans wanted, so they never really entered into a community of faith. They drifted away as suddenly as they arrived. I suspect that reconciling the monstrosity they had witnessed in the name of religion with a truly religious way of life was too slow and arduous a process. The religious way of life is cultivated by inward reckoning. There are no simple answers from an external source that will make things right. Living religiously is a process, and it begins with us as we are. We bring the whole of our experience to our search for truth and meaning. When we enter into a congregation such as this one, we bring our hopes and dreams. We may also come with a lot of baggage. Entering into relationship with anyone, let alone a group of people, is complicated. When I meet for the first time with couples planning to marry, I ask them to relate their personal and religious histories to me. We do this because when people enter into a committed relationship, they don't come to it alone. They bring with them their families, their religious pasts, and all the people and experiences that have shaped their values. As I explained to couples, when you're living in a three-room apartment, it can get really crowded with all those people present. So you need to know who all those folks are, because they are all present, embodied in the people we have become. This is true in congregations as well. You may come together around common goals and values, but what brought you to this place is different for each one of you. I have a friend, Patty, who is a Unitarian Universalist now, but she was raised Catholic. She remembers that as a tiny little girl, if she forgot her chapel veil, that's a round little lace covering you put on your head to walk into the sanctuary. If she forgot it, the nuns would attach a Kleenex to her head with a bobby pin. Patty remembers being slapped by the nuns. She also recalls watching the nuns take off the glasses of certain boys in the class and hitting them in the head. Her Catholic childhood was marked with regimentation, indoctrination, and alienation, all of which she has spent her entire adulthood attempting to overcome. Patty was traumatized by her Catholic upbringing. I grew up in the Catholic Church too, and yet our experiences were very different. Patty's was much more damaging than mine. I do recall the tissue attached to a bare head upon entering the church. And if I was with my mother, there was a good possibility that it might have even been a used tissue. Lipstick. But I was fortunate not to be the recipient of physical violence from church leaders. The baggage that I carry is more psychological in nature. I rebelled against what I was being taught about women and God, and yet, despite that, I internalized the messages that men were made in the image of God and that women were made to serve men. For years after joining the Unitarian Universalist Church in Amherst, Massachusetts, I reacted very negatively at the mere mention of God or Jesus, or what we referred to back then as the G and the J words. Unitarian Universalism was in its early adolescence back then. This was the late 70s, and we were all in agreement about our rebellion against Christianity. That's the only thing we had probably agreed on. The Amherst congregation was Unitarian in origin, and the Universalist message that God is love was not ever spoken of inside that meeting house. For almost a decade, I found there a haven for my oppressive religion of my childhood. And then I discovered that the reactive way of viewing my Catholic roots was not in keeping with the values I professed as a Unitarian Universalist. By then, our principles and purposes had been introduced. And for the first time, we were exposed to an articulate rendering of what shaped our faith. The hour was a big difference. Until then, the faith was very individual. In fact, we never actually used the F word, faith. The other one we did, probably, in Amherst. We lifted up the individual's quest for truth and meaning, and we gave lip service to being tolerant of each other's religious views. Because tolerance was the cornerstone of Unitarian Universalism, at least in Amherst at that time. And being tolerant of others' beliefs and behaviors was really difficult for somebody like me. In fact, my fear of not being able to be tolerant enough kept me from joining the congregation for at least a year after I started attending. I couldn't imagine how I could possibly be tolerant of others when I had never learned to be tolerant of myself. Then in the 1980s, the principles and purposes were introduced, and the separate traditions of Unitarianism and Universalism were finally coming together, at least on paper, more than 20 years after the actual consolidation of the two religions. The word tolerance does not appear anywhere in the principles and purposes. Instead, you will see words like acceptance of one another and the living tradition we share. They were used to inspire us to deepen our understanding and expand our vision as people of faith. We began to discuss not just what had brought us to Unitarian Universalism, but where it was leading us. We stopped talking about ourselves just long enough to listen to each other and to learn from each other. We began to move from being a group of individuals who discarded our old ways toward creating a religious community that embraced the whole of our experience. 30-plus years later, Unitarian Universalists are still working toward becoming a religious community that is more than a collection of individuals. We are still learning how to be accepting and encouraging of spiritual growth in our congregations. We are still in the process of becoming who we want to be as people of faith. Our personal religious views are as individual as our histories, and yet we remain convinced that we can create a religious community that not only welcomes us as we are, but that pushes us to become the people we want to be. One of the inhibitors to fully realizing our religious potential is what might be called religious PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder. We're probably more familiar with PTSD in individuals who have been in wars or who have suffered from traumatic events outside the normal range of a person's experience. PTSD is characterized by hypervigilance, by reliving the trauma and very strong reactions to things that remind us of the trauma. The diagnosis of PTSD was only officially recognized in 1980. Those included under that diagnosis have witnessed or experienced a perceived threat to their lives, their safety, or perhaps their well-being. They may re-experience the traumatic event in some way, such as flashbacks or dreams. People with PTSD become hypervigilant about their environment, and they go out of their way to avoid anything that reminds them of the trauma. Or they may become emotionally numb to protect themselves from having to deal with the emotions that arose from the event. Religious PTSD might occur in individuals who've been subjected to ritual abuse or to the kind of experiences my friend Patty described. But it may also include those who have been psychologically wounded by religion. The intentional wearing down of the soul is reason enough to want to distance oneself from words and images that may evoke feelings of anger, fear, or resentment. I know someone who reacts negatively and very strongly to a tone of voice that is perceived as parental. This person lashes out to thwart off a potential attack and distances herself from what is actually happening in the moment and from the person with whom she's speaking. For many of us, words like God relate to a domineering father who metes out punishment and judgment if we don't obey his will. Jesus Christ may evoke images of suffering to save us from sin. And when we hear the word sin, we think we're being judged and found guilty. Unitarian Universalists come from different religious paths, which you can see from our tree. But some of them left us scarred. We may be suffering from religious PTSD, and our spiritual growth may be hindered by our inability to move through the words and the images that hold us hostage. In his book, The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle suggests that we look beyond the words. Over the centuries, he writes, many erroneous views and interpretations have accumulated around words such as sin due to ignorance, misunderstanding, or a desire to control. But they contain an essential core of truth. Don't get stuck on the level of the words, he urges. A word is no more than a means to an end. It's an abstraction. Not unlike a signpost, it points beyond itself. Tolle suggests that if a word doesn't work for you anymore, then drop it and replace it with one that does. If you don't like the word sin, call it unconsciousness or insanity. That may get you closer to the truth than a long misused word like sin, and it leaves a lot less room for guilt. My own journey of renaming what I know began when I encountered the work of Mary Daly, a radical feminist ex-Catholic nun who taught at Boston College. Daly described God as a verb, the verb being. The supreme being with whom I had grown up could no longer hold me hostage against my will. The God with power over me became the God within me, because the power was in the whole of my being. Eckhart Tolle prefers not to use the word God because it has become empty of meaning through thousands of years of misuse. By misuse, he means that people use it with great conviction, as if they knew what they were talking about, or they argue against it as if they knew what they are denying. This misuse gives rise to absurd beliefs and assertions and egoistic delusions such as my or our God is the only true God and your God is false. Thus the wars we have seen happen. Or it may be Nietzsche's famous statement, God is dead. Like Mary Daly, Eckhart Tolle suggests the word being as a way of helping us experience that toward which it points. The measure for whether a word is a help or a hindrance is to ask the question, does it point beyond itself to a transcendental reality, or does it lend itself too easily to becoming a mental idol? For him, the word being has the advantage over the word God because it's an open concept. He describes being, with a capital B, as that which is accessible to you now as your own deepest self, your own true nature. That desire for that kind of being is what draws many of us to congregations such as this. We want to access our own deepest selves, our own true natures. The hope that we can live as spiritual beings, as part of a faith community, is what keeps us here. How are we to realize our religious potential as individuals and as a congregation if we're caught in a web of words that mean something different to each of us? We might begin by looking at our own experience. If words like God or Jesus, sin, prayer, or communion cause us to feel threatened, anxious, or angry, then we need to examine the source of the discomfort. What hurt us? What got hurt in us? And if we can't identify the source, then we can proceed to treat the trauma and begin to heal from it when we do identify it. Appropriate treatment for religious PTSD involves coming together with others to discuss and process feelings around the traumatic events. There must be follow-up and ongoing support. You can help each other by not only telling your stories, but by listening to each other's story. If you want to access your deepest self as a person of faith, seek out other people who are willing to listen, and then allow them to share their own spiritual journeys with you. We can educate and comfort each other while providing the opportunity to process feelings that hold us back. Although the experience to which we react may have been inflicted upon us, we're now adults, and it's our responsibility to address what we know and to explore what we don't know. Personal responsibility and introspection are ours to accept, even though we didn't invite the past that holds us back. A congregation like this can be a safe place for examining the pieces of the past that shape the present. But only if there is a willingness to do the work of introspection and acceptance, and an environment that encourages both of these. Change the words if you must, but listen. Listen to the inner journeys of others as well as to your own. If you're willing to come together in love, you can do the necessary internal work. When you recover from religious PTSD to being wholly yourselves, the words will cease to have power over you. And the hopes and the dreams that brought you to this religious community will find their being within you as people of faith. So be it. Let's rise in body or spirit to sing hymn number 1008, or When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place. Flame but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Remembering that the universe is so much larger than our ability to comprehend, let us go forth from this time together with the resolve to stop trying to reduce the incomprehensible to our own expectations, so that wonder and that sense of what is sacred can open up our minds and light up our lives. Blessed be.
Please join me in singing My Life Goes On.